The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by my good pals, Jada Griffin, Brian Altano, and Matt Kim. Hello, everybody. What's up?
Beyond.
Hey, Max. Beyond.
Beyond, indeed. There's some fun stuff to talk about. The big thing that we want to talk about, we're going to get to this in a second. There's a new trailer for Star Wars Outlaws, which is coming out this year. It's coming out this summer. I think we knew it was this year, but that feels like it's getting a nice August 30th release date, which it's just nice to see that, you know. I feel like I'm kind of
a real date, number.
And you know, again, it could always get kicked a few weeks down the road, and that wouldn't be the strangest thing to happen. But you know, it's nice to have something to look forward to. We got a little kind of tidbit of little tease of what's in store for the story. Kind of more of a look at this strange galaxy, which I've never seen anything like before, except for the numerous shows and movies and books and action figures and novels, etc. Aside from that, there's also some going-ons in the Helldivers galaxy. We're going to talk about it. Those no good robots, they're back, baby. And we got all sorts of exciting new guns, such as the grenade pistol and a crossbow that shoots explosives to take care of them. That should be cool. Before we get that, I want to get in a couple little news stories. I have great news for you, my friends. Bloodborne Kart finally has a release date, but it's not Bloodborne Kart anymore. It's Nightmare Kart. Yep. How do we feel?
Yes.
This is the fan-made Bloodborne Kart racer that Sony went, no. And so the devs had to go back to the proverbial, probably literal drawing board, retool a bunch of stuff, and make it legally distinct. So now it's called Nightmare Kart. It's coming out on... Is it April 24th, I think? Did I pull this up?
Yeah, May 31st. It feels like if you set up a lemonade stand in front of a company that went out of business 5 years ago, and then the landlord is like, you can't be here. I'm glad this is coming out, but yeah, make a real Bloodborne game, please, Sony. But in the meantime, yeah, this looks amazing. I don't care that they're changing the title of it. This is Bloodborne Kart by everything but name. Like all the characters, all the art direction, the music's inspired by it. Like there's just tons of stuff in here. I love that this is like very clearly something that started out as like a joke, and they just committed to the bit. Pedal to the metal, no pun intended, and now we will have a kart racing game starring a bunch of goofy idiots from Bloodborne in like just the most jittery PS1 graphics. I think it's just so lovely. It's so much fun. This is what indie games are all about. Like this, you know. And I'm glad this is getting released. I think this is to Sony's credit. If this was the kind of thing happening on a Nintendo side, these people would be in jail with no food. So it's coming out.
Yep. And they're releasing it for free. Like, that's awesome. Like, go indie devs. I love indie devs.
Well, I think they have to.
Probably. Yeah. At this point.
Yeah. If they accept a penny for it, then
that's when Sony comes and takes away their food.
What's that quote? What? Bloodborne cart or nightmare cart, as some call it.
Yeah. You can mail them vials of blood if you want to thank them for their services.
There was a story going around. I think it was an interview we did with a Nintendo lawyer and former Nintendo lawyer, and they talked about how basically they never want to shut down fan projects, and they sort of try not to immediately, but the second that it like gets the second there's money involved, you know, whether it's like a tip jar or a Patreon or like actually selling the thing, they're like, you can't make money off of the Pokemon MMO. I'm sorry, we got to take that down, that kind of thing. So I guess it's smart that they've that they're just giving this out for free. It's also very nice. It's going to be on Steam and itch.io. So I feel like the odds of it ever making its way to PlayStation are pretty slim, which is kind of a drag. But like, I don't know. It's cool to see it. I'm wondering if this doesn't gain some traction on its own and maybe starts to become a real thing. I love stuff on the internet when it starts out as a joke and gradually snowballs into being a real actual thing. Remember, what was it? Them's Fightin' Herds. You know about this?
Yes.
Yep. Which started out as a My Little Pony Friendship is Magic fighting game, a thing that people wanted, you know, and Hasbro was like, no, stop it. And then they were like, fine, they don't have to be ponies. They can be all sorts of hooved animals or herd animals or whatever. And then that's, you know, that's a game that exists. It got fan favorites.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is just Bible fanfiction, you know?
pretty much.
So
I've got to say that I'm excited for when this drops for us to be able to, like, play against each other on our Steam decks. Like, this is going to be the new Mario Kart.
I'm very curious how much jank and troubleshooting there is to figure out how to do that, but I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it's happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, nice PSA for any of our listeners who wish that there'd be a new Bloodborne game. Jeepers creepers, I sure would too. Wouldn't that be nice? Anyway, I guess on a related note, we got an update about the most played PlayStation games of 2023. And would you believe it? None of them were developed by Sony and none of them were released in 2023. Actually, I guess one of them was released in 2023. Most of them are very old games that just keep getting perpetual updates. So, you know, it's kind of a shocker that new games get any traction at all. But the top 10, and some of these, I feel like you could probably guess this a mile away. Fortnite, GTA 5. Call of Duty, including Modern Warfare 3, 2, and Warzone, EA Sports FC 24, which is effectively, you know, FIFA 24, 23, or whatever you want to call it, Roblox, Rocket League, Minecraft, Rainbow Six Siege, Apex Legends, and Fall Guys. So
I was like, you know, which one released last year? And I was like, oh, the EA Sports FC 24.
Yeah.
Which I played. So count me in as one of the statistics. Of
playing. Well, you know what? I was gonna fault you, Matt, but you're at least playing a game from last year, so
yeah, it's new.
You're helping fight the cause.
I played none of those games last year.
Like, I mean, this makes sense to me, right? It's the reason why everybody was fighting for The Office under streaming service, right? People don't watch new shows; they want to rewatch The Office for the third time, fourth time, 400th
right.
time. You know,
you only watched The Office 3 times, Matt.
Here's my secret: I've never watched The Office once. So
what?
Yeah.
What if The Office, every time you watched it, gave you new scenes and you could get Spider-Man and Gambit and the Predator to show up if you threw money in it? That's basically what is happening with a lot of these games now. And I get it because it's like,
if it did that, that'd be great.
It would be great, right?
I mean, we do get the Joker in one episode of The Office, so we're not far off.
The Fortnite of games. There's a lot to unpack here. Some of it is sort of depressing, I'll say. Statistically, it makes a lot of sense because you're not going to play Spider-Man 2 for more hours than you're going to play Fortnite. Fortnite is just designed to have its, you know, tendrils in you. And like, to be fair, I'm not mad at any of these games, except for the FIFA soccer one, because that sport sucks. It's tremendously boring in real life. I can say that as someone that had to play it on the battlefields of cold New Jersey Sunday mornings in November for a decade in little shorts. It sucks. I'm Italian, so I can say soccer sucks or football, whatever you idiots call it. You're all beating the hell out of each other for it. You score one goal in 4 hours, and then there's like 45 minutes of injury time. And then the video game version is like, what if you had that plus gambling? Sucks, dude. Get a better game. Someone don't beef with that. Call of Duty, you guys are boring too, but have fun. Roblox, I don't know. That just seems like indentured servitude for children to make content for a billionaire. So I got a problem with that. Apex, no big deal. Fall Guys, it's funny. I like you with your silly costumes and whatnot and your nonsense. But all of it makes sense because a lot of these games are free to play. And so you get a console for $500 and then you go, crap, I'm out of money. Are you going to spend $70 on a game that you can beat in 12 hours? Or are you going to play something that will, you know, scratch the itch every single day and incentivizes you checking in constantly? So that makes sense. What the thing I keep coming back to on this is that we are slowly heading towards a situation where an entire generation of gamers is growing up playing only a handful of games. right? Yeah. And I have no scorn towards the younger generations at all. This is the hand that was dealt to them. All of my scorn is for boomers. I reserved all of that for them. If you've all earned it, can't wait for you all to croak and give up your houses to all my friends. I'm wondering what the industry looks like in 15 years, what discourse looks like in 15 years when people have really only played these games as a service games, right? Like I think if you look at us, we're like, what's your favorite nostalgia game? Oh, I love Mario 64 and Link to the Past and Jak and Daxter and stuff like that. And a lot of that infers sort of the purchasing habits for the rest of your life. It also helps companies decide what they're going to make next, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you grew up playing, Ratchet and Clank games, when they make a new Ratchet and Clank game, you're like, oh, I'm all over this, right?
Yep.
And so I do wonder what that looks like. And I don't necessarily think it's bad or good per se, but... games are expensive, consoles are expensive, and kids play what their friends are playing. And these are also, they double as third spaces, which is basically like there's home, there's school, and there's Fortnite, right? Or there's home, there's work, and there's Call of Duty. So I understand why people are gathering in these places and hanging out, shooting each other.
Well, the weird thing is that it's you can never go home again, and that sort of applies to a constantly shifting live service model too. With the exception of, there was that thing I think recently, it was after the Microsoft Activision buyout or whatever, they just put a bunch of old Call of Duty games on Game Pass, I think, or they made one backwards compatible or whatever it was, and a ton of people just flocked to play old multiplayer Call of Duty games, and it was just, you have like a brand new 4K cutting edge open world, state of the art version. But some people just kind of want that comfort food and kind of jump back into that. But, it's funny because like Fortnite did a similar thing where they brought back what Battle Royale 1.0, where like they resurrected a chunk of the original island that, people have memories of. But it's bizarre because it's those spaces are like constantly rapidly developing neighborhoods. Your favorite restaurant is, it's going to come and go in a blink of an eye, or there's going to be limited time events that, only stick around for a limited time. And then, you have these fond memories of that specific point, but, as opposed to going back and replaying something like Link to the Past or Mario 64 or rewatching a favorite movie, which is sort of a static experience, you don't have that with stuff like this, which that does raise the question is, what does that do for nostalgia? Which, again, that's a whole other can of worms of, nostalgia being, strip mined for marketing purposes and us not really having any new stuff to look back or to look forward to. Yeah. We're just kind of resurrecting old stuff. But
yeah,
does it do for single player games in general, too? Right. Look at Spider-Man 2, fastest selling PlayStation game of all time, massively over budget. Studio did layoffs after announcing that it was breaking records and all that. I think, and then at the same time, you had Sony very publicly on multiple occasions saying that they were pivoting a bunch of studios to games as a service stuff. They tried that with Naughty Dog and then spent years on it and bailed because this thing now where it's like, there's 10 really popular casinos on the strip and you want to make a new one. Can you break in? And if you can, holy crap. Like if you get into this, if you can crack into this top 10 using, this one of these forever games, these Groundhog's Day games, basically, where you wake up and every single day is the same, but slightly different. And maybe you get better at piano. Then you're set for life. But I think it's hard for a lot of companies to break in, or they'll spend a ton of money trying to get there, like Suicide Squad, right? They were like, they wanted that to be a games as a service, and like the player count is abysmal now, swing and a miss, right? And we don't know the impact that's going to have on the studio as a whole. Naughty Dog tried it, and then you have other companies that are like, we're doing single player games, and the expectation for single player games is that they are X amount of hours long, and they are hyper realistic, and they have this, and this, and like all those things cost a lot of money to make. And so I do wonder, like, if you have a whole generation that grew up just playing games as a service games, where single player games will exist 10, 15 years from now. I don't think they'll ever truly go away. We just talked about Bloodborne Kart, right? Which is like a game made like by a small team of people, if not one person. So like people will always be making games. The indie scene is better than ever. But in terms of AAA, like first party single player games from PlayStation, I do wonder what that future looks like.
But you've got to look back though at the history of games as a whole when it comes to multiplayer. type games. Like, there has been hundreds, if not thousands, of games that have come out, had their time to shine with their multiplayer, and then they dwindle. Player numbers dwindle. You know, you mentioned Suicide Squad. Yes, the number count is down on that game. But there have been so many games that have had loyal, dedicated fan bases that continue playing that game for years. And, like, there may be 100, 200, 1,000 people that are just playing this game, but those people are, like, dedicated to that game and playing that game. So I think we'll still have some of that nostalgia. I think it's just, it may be a little bit more thinned out than what we grew up with during our time of playing games. But
no, that makes sense.
I think it is still there.
Like, one of the things I was thinking about is, like, you know, 10, 12 years ago, a lot of similar games were dominating the sales charts, right? You had your Call of Duties, your Maddens, your FIFAs and stuff like that were always the best-selling games of the year. But interestingly enough, back then, they predicated that market on, like, you buying a new game every year. Right? Like, you would drop $60, you'd get the new Madden with a year in the title, you'd get the new Call of Duty. And now I think people are like, you know, outside of, like, your FIFAs, which still have annual releases and Madden and stuff like that, Call of Duty Warzone is sort of like its own thing, right? Fortnite is not a game that you spend $60 a year on. You don't buy a new Fortnite 2024 or whatever, but you might spend twice that just on battle passes and skins without really thinking about it. And to, like, you're convincing yourself that that's worth it because you're spending a ton of hours in that game. And, like, in many ways, you're probably saving money rather than buying a bunch of, like, shorter single player experiences for $60 or $70 now. If you're buying, like, backpacks and pickaxes and nonsense in Fortnite every couple of weeks, like, you're actually probably spending less than you are on anywhere else. And you're also able to access that content on multiple devices, right? Your PlayStation account syncs with your iPhone and your PC and stuff like that. And so I think the bigger question is, like, are consoles something for, like, older generations, and will younger generations flock to them? Like, and I don't think that Sony's going to give up on making consoles forever, but I do think that, like, if you have younger players accessing games like Fortnite on their mobile phones or on their PCs that they have at home or MacBooks or whatever it is that they're also using for school or work or whatever, they might be less inclined to spend $500, $600 on a brand new console. And so I do wonder where that goes in the future. Not to get grim about things, but, like, it does shape a very different version of the games industry than the one we all grew up with, for better or worse.
So I think I think what we're telling our audience here is, go play some different games, guys.
Yeah, hug your PS5 while you
slide. Sort of tying all this together, something that popped into my head, there was the Friday the 13th Resurrected, where they took a bunch of fans took the Friday the 13th game, which got taken offline, and, you know, there were people who wanted to play it, and they were like, we're bringing it back, it's coming out of the lake, just like Jason Voorhees, you can play it again. And then the publisher was like, absolutely not, shut it down. And that's such a bummer, because it was like, well, are you going to make it? No.
Yeah. Okay. So again, the lemonade stand in front of the abandoned building.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, why?
No, sir. Camp Crystal Lake is condemned. Don't go in there. You're not allowed. Keep out. Stay out. So I don't know. That's, you know, we talk about Suicide Squad. Was something that came up, I think, last week when we were talking about the interpretation of the Joker. Do you remember Gotham City Imposters?
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There's some weird Jokers there.
I previewed that game at PAX. It was awful.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that was, like, it existed in a timeline that was sort of amidst a bunch of actual functional Arkham games that people loved. And you can get away with that, right? It's sort of like when Nintendo put out, like, Metroid Prime Federation Force, that terrible soccer game, not to keep kicking soccer while it's dead.
Wait, that was a soccer game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was like, we were it. Yes, there was a vacancy of Metroid games at the time, and you can't do that then, right? Like, you're allowed to do, you can do silly little nonsense like that on the side when your main courses are all good to go, right? But like, Gotham City Imposters came out, and we were like, whatever. I can't believe we're showing footage of this piece of crap.
It's not a soccer game. It's like, it's an
number
FPS.
One PlayStation podcast around. Absolutely. Check. Don't look at the charts. Take my word for it. Just showing you soccer. Federation
what do you think
Force.
That is? Yeah.
You have to shoot the morph ball.
It's team
shoot
based.
They'll give you a red card if you do that in real soccer. If you just start shooting
don't worry about it. It'll never come to PlayStation or anything. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So, yeah, not to get all doom and gloom, there is something to talk about. in the world of big, huge AAA single player games based in a beloved 43 something year old, you know, fictional intellectual property, Star Wars Outlaws got a brand new story trailer for this. I'm excited for this game. I like Star Wars. Specifically, I think it's at this point, saying you like Star Wars is like saying you like sports. It's the opposite of that in terms of that sentiment, but in terms of just being, okay, which corner, which end of Star Wars do you like? What do you like about, do you like super bombad racing? Do you like young adult novels about the High Republic? What does that mean? I specifically have always gravitated towards the weird, seedy back alleys, the wretched hives of scum and villainy, the criminal underworld element, specifically between Empire and Jedi. I feel like Shadows of the Empire was a huge, huge kind of thing that informed my early, you know, consumption of Star Wars. I love Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina. I love these weird short stories about, you know, gross aliens doing illegal stuff. This game is fully focused on that, and it's an open world game, and I'm so excited for it, and I just really hope Ubisoft doesn't f it up. I'll say it. We're gonna bleep a few F-bombs anyway.
No, you're speaking my language, Max, 100%. This is I believe it's the first game since Shadows of the Empire to take place in between Empire and Jedi, and Shadows of the Empire wasn't canon, and I'm guessing this is, because it's, you know, allowed to exist, and Disney's pretty tight on that stuff these days. But yeah, I'm a geek for Jabba's Palace, right? And seeing the protagonist Kay Vess walk into Jabba's Palace, and there's Gamorrean guards and Salacious Crumb and Bib Fortuna, and they're all hanging out. Like, I love that. I love that whole, like, you know, we've gotten several Jedi games. We've gotten several games where you do dogfighting and pilot ships and stuff like that. We got the Battlefront games where you do a little bit of all of that stuff, right? So I love that. I love that this is like a straight up third person open world action adventure game. It's got that sort of, like, you know, Uncharted climbing, and the, you know, probably it's going to have skill trees and Ubisoft towers, and like, people give Ubisoft a lot of shit for the Ubisoft tower stuff. I love that stuff. Like, I'm loving it in Rise of the Ronin right now. Every couple of months, or once or twice a year, I play a game that has a big map full of little dots, and I go to all the dots and I do all the fun quests and all the stuff, and it's just popcorn for me, and I adore it. I love
it. It's bubble wrap. It's a giant thing that has little things for you to pop and go, you know, cool. Go over. It is fun. I love a good open world Ubisoft game. When I say I don't want them to F it up, the thing I'm concerned about is I feel like Avatar Frontiers of Pandora looked like an ace in the hole. I was like, it's just going to be Far Cry with big cats. Cool. Big cats and mech suits and pterodactyls. I'm into it. And for whatever reason, it just didn't. It was missing that Far Cry hook. I don't know exactly what it was. I think maybe the fact you're encouraged to respect nature instead of shooting it with a grenade launcher. I'm not sure. But I was like, you know, this seems like the most no-brainer, you know, don't mess it up. And it was an all right game. Like, it wasn't, but it was missing whatever it was that always clicks for me about those games. I'm really hoping that this is just like, just Watch Dogs 2 with Star Wars. Like, just give me. Yeah.
So I think we're setting ourselves up for failure with having that mindset. I think we're setting ourselves up for failure with that mindset, because yes, Avatar is very much still kind of Far Cry, but in space with on Pandora, but it's also very different for gameplay, like, style. Like, yes, you're still traversing this open world, you're still finding things to do, but I think a lot of Avatar, on top of being the most beautiful game Ubisoft has ever made, I think it's just the prettiest when it comes to graphics and just art style. It is a game where there are lots of things to do, but they're less obvious. And I think that the thing that was what they were going with that one is they wanted you to, like, actively kind of hunt and see things out and, like, go a different direction. So it wasn't a one-to-one to Far Cry or Assassin's Creed or whatever Ubisoft game you want to compare it to. So, like, I think, yes, it's going to borrow some mechanics. It's going to borrow some features, some lessons that they've learned in these types of games. And same with Star Wars Outlaws. It's going to borrow stuff from Watch Dogs. It's going to borrow stuff from Assassin's Creed and Far Cry. But I think we'd be remiss if we just want it to be that game with the Star Wars skin.
I mean, it's not going to be exactly that game. You know, there's space travel. It's going to be open world, but you're going to be jumping between different sandboxes, so to speak. I don't know how that's going to play out exactly. We've seen similar open world-ish areas in the, you know, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, you know, where you hop in your ship and there's sort of fast travel, but those always felt more structured like a Metroidvania to me than like a full open world. Yeah. In terms of sort of traversal, it's a little bit more, you know, there's more hallways than fields, if that makes sense.
Right. Am I misremembering? Am I not thinking that Outlaws is not going to have real-time space travel?
I believe it was in the gameplay trailer, like you can get into your ship and you're thinking of Starfield.
Yeah, Outlaws definitely has it there. Like the 10-minute gameplay trailer they released last summer or whatever. They have like a space fight that you do that they have.
Yeah, Kay goes from like swoop bike into her ship and then takes off into space, and then you're up there and you're dogfighting. Like that's
and then you can fly to another planet if you wanted to.
Yeah,
or hyper jump, you know, whichever.
Yeah, I believe that's like something that the team is focusing on.
They said that there's not free flying above the game's planets. Like it's not going to be No Man's Sky.
Yeah,
there's going to be some spaceship stuff, but I imagine it's like. If I had to guess, it's we got to prep the engines for a jump to hyperspace, but you got to fend off TIE fighters while we're counting down to that or something.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what they showed in the gameplay trailer. So, which is fine by me. But
I'm jinx. Not to be nitpicky, but there's like little things here that like some of the character animations look like a little wonky to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not like super sold on like the human antagonist. Although
his name is Slevo.
Yeah, which is funny because that's like a very it's like a very Hutt name, and I think Slimo is like a curse word in
Huttese. Yeah, to Scrooty Dopot Slimo.
Yeah, and what I also this is probably a stretch, but like he's wearing this like furry overcoat thing that kind of looks like what the stand-in for Jabba the Hutt wore in A New Hope in the deleted scene that they then comped in that really bad CG. Jabba, you know, when Han Solo steps on his tail and just like goes up and comes back down that they did in the special editions in the late 90s. And then there's also parts where you see Kay like doing like a roll into a jump type of thing. And it just looks a little wonky. Ultimately, I don't really care. Like give me just a big, fun, crazy Star Wars game to sink my teeth into. Give me some good gunplay and combat. Give me some secrets. Give me some things to hunt and fight. And you know, I love that stuff. I love hanging out in these worlds. Like we don't really get a lot of, you know, open world games anymore that feel like this. Like there's a lot of, you know, fantasy open world games that are like kind of like Dragon's Dogma, right? And you know, and then you get like stuff like Rise of the Ronin, the like period piece stuff, and this is just like full-on sci-fi fantasy action open world stuff, and I'm really into it. Like, and like Max said, like this is just a really fun era to explore. Like, and so I think that if they can do the thing that it's very hard for Star Wars creators to do right now, which is mostly stay away from the familiar. Like we've got the you know, Jabba the Hutt in there and stuff like that. But like, I don't need to see Luke Skywalker in this game. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see Darth Vader in this game. Like those guys keep popping up in all this crap. Like if you can make this story and focus on the Outer Rim, and you can focus on like the seedy underbelly and the crime world and stuff like that, and just, you know, play a little floor is lava with Luke and Leia. Han is obviously he's on ice in this one, so it's in carbonite. So yeah, stay away from that stuff. There is some, like I saw like one of the pre-order bonuses is like you can get Lando's cape for the main character. That fine, that's all that is cool, right? But I don't need us to sort of just be like, oh, and here's Yoda.
I 100% agree. I think I like it sprinkled in, and when it's like, it feels earned. Like Star Wars Jedi Survivor, you know, last year had a big cameo at the end of one of the side quests that you had to earn by doing all that side quest stuff. I'm not going to say it here because I don't want to spoil it, and because it's one of my favorite moments for that game. But I like it when it's kind of sprinkled in and it makes sense in universe, and it's also not somebody who has been in everything and plastered all over. So I'm very happy when they do that. So hopefully they do walk that line but we also do know that, man, people pay when they want to see the big attractions when they go to the carnival.
I'm sick of the Star Wars galaxy being too small. Like I'm sick of it when it's like when you know, familiar characters show up, and I get it, you know, because you want to have, you know, Darth Vader as a fan favorite, whatever. But there's also, I want some more C-tier fan favorites. I want, you know, get like Boba Fett shows up everywhere. I love Boba Fett. He's cool. give me Dengar. Mispronouncing an Iggy Pop song. Give me some Dengar. I want to see Dengar show up. Dengar is a toilet mummy. Give me some Forlom and Zuckuss. Give me some Boss. Give me some second stringers. Give me some of those guys. And in the context of an open world game that is, you know, focused on the scum and villainy side of things, having some of those characters pop up is like, it's free real estate. I'm excited for a bunch of those very specific, basically us type of Easter eggs, like this kind of thing that we're after. And they're going to have some, you know, they're going to have some more recognizable AAA people pop up.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Lando makes an appearance in his, you know, in his Tamtel Screech cosplay or whatever, but
I got my cape on.
Yeah, but he's going to be wearing that stupid helmet, you know, and he's going to pull down the thing.
I don't want to hear anything from anyone about how this game needs lightsaber combat. Like, we have so many of those games. We got one last year. Like, they made two really good Star Wars Jedi games, and they'll probably make a third.
We're good. It's fine. Yep. Yes. Yeah. Andor was some of the best Star Wars we've gotten in ages, and it didn't have any lightsabers. It was great. Just people shooting each other in back alleys. Maybe that's not what people like Star Wars for, but it's what I like it for. Give me some of that scum and villainy, you know, that's what I need. So hopefully
Tom, our producer, wants to see Arden Lin, the martial arts assassin with a giant f-ing robot arm.
Tom really just wants some Masters of the Terras Kasi in there, which I get, you know. He pointed out that Cobb Vanth is basically Jodo Kass. We're talking about this before the call. Jodo Kass, if you're unfamiliar, is a guy who wound up with some Mandalorian armor and was cosplaying as Boba Fett. And then Boba Fett showed up and just, you know, fragged his ass and then took his armor back, which is cool. But Did you know in the original Star Wars canon that when Dengar got married, Boba Fett was his best man at the wedding? I don't know. Make that a side quest. Put that in the game.
Dengar got married. Who married Dengar?
He married a woman named Mana Ru, who was blue, and they used a cybernetic link cable to they basically had to have avatar sex with a USB cable between their heads,
like Demolition Man sex.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Does he unwrap his toilet paper before bed?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what he's got under there. He's got a bunch. Supposedly, he got in a swoop race with Han Solo on Corellia and got totally messed up in the Crystal Swamps and had to get horrible surgery. And he got underwater. He basically got like the Imperial Weapon X treatment where they turned him into a super soldier and he was like a cold, unfeeling assassin. Man, I missed that. None of that's real. It's all fake.
I don't know extra fake now. You think you might get from some of the other IGN podcasts out there, but it's not this.
You're not getting this deep Star Wars lore.
Yeah.
No one else at IGN or any other PlayStation show anywhere is trying to unwrap Dengar in their minds.
We're gonna show up. We're gonna talk shit on soccer, and then we're gonna talk more shit on the Earth Federation Force, and then we're gonna praise Dengar, one of the least popular Star Wars characters ever.
Yeah. Underneath all that toilet paper, he's a beautiful man. Like, look at him. He's great. Wouldn't you just look at that guy after a long day and be like, hey, honey, come to bed, take the toilet paper turban off and get in, take off the weird vac metal that you stuck all over your body. Let's get you look cold. Let's cuddle.
I want John C. Reilly to play him. I think John C. Reilly would do a killer Dengar.
Yo, he actually kind of looks like John C. Reilly. Just like I could see.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Also, John C. Reilly line from Boogie Nights. He's like, people tell me I look kind of like Han Solo. What do you think? Like, how many times have you seen Star Wars? How much can you bench? Like that would be such a meta Dengar line. I don't know.
He had such a tough time at the beginning of the COVID pandemic with the toilet paper shortage because everyone kept thinking it was him that took it all. So he would go into Woolworth's CVS and just to be clear,
we have like multiple meetings a week to plan a run a show, and at no point during the previous meetings where we're like, there's no wall of text about Dengar. Matt Kim was like, I had other stuff to do, and I said I'd jump on the show with you. And
he's just my mistake. I don't know any of them. You guys have just been talking for like 10 minutes about something that I've just been like,
is this English?
There's two commenters who are like, this is great. More of that, guys. This is exactly what I come here for. And then there's like 40 who are like, stick to the news, you fucking asshole. And we're like, all right, we're doing it.
Blocked and reported.
That's why we gave him news first.
Matt, what's your read on Star Wars Outlaws? What would make you give a crap about a new Star Wars game? Is this moving the needle for you? I'm curious kind of what your take is.
I like, I mean, a lot of the points that y'all have already hit, I'm in agreement with. Like, this is a part of the universe that I do enjoy. The scum and villainy stuff is, I think, something that we haven't seen in video game form that I've played yet. I've been playing a lot of Jedi stuff lately, and so this is a nice change of pace. I'm definitely in agreement with you about lightsaber combat. I do not need to play as another lightsaber character for, at least until the next Jedi game, So that'll be fun. Other than that, I don't know. I can't get over the fact that the main bad guy's name is fucking Slivo. Slivo?
Slero.
Slero.
Slero?
Yeah.
Slero. I had to pause the trailer where they're like, you're wanted by Slero. And I paused it. I went outside. I laughed a little bit. I came back inside. I finished watching the trailer.
It's not even in like the top 10 dumbest, totally on the nose Star Wars bad guys names.
No,
like,
it's not.
General Grievous is up there.
General Grievous is a great name.
It is a great name. But who's the guy in the Clone Wars? His name's like Chris Evil or whatever. Like, it's something so stupid.
I mean, you said it. Salacious
Savage Opress.
Right?
Savage Opress.
Cad Bane.
I like Cad Bane.
Oh, yeah. It's Jerk Nuisance. Dope. Watch out, everybody.
Who's the name of the Destic dealer? The Destic dealer's name was like Drug Dealero or something.
Elon Sleaze Bago.
Sleaze Bagano.
Elon Sleaze Bagano, owner of the Tesla Corporation. There was an anecdote working on Sam Witwer Star Wars games.
Oh, Force Unleashed?
Yeah, Force Unleashed. Mm-hmm. That I forget the name of it, but like they wanted to come up with a bad guy. I'm totally butchering this anecdote, but George Lucas was there and they asked him to come up with a bad guy name. And he was just like, Darth Poopy. And everyone in the room was like, thinking he was going to laugh or something. And then he didn't. And they were just like, oh, he really for real wants us to name. All right. Let's keep it moving. Let's move on past that. Hope everyone's doing good.
All right.
One thing I do like that they're bringing over from, like, say, the Far Cry series is Nyx. Nyx looks like to be just like a improved version of the pet system we got like in Far Cry 6. I mean, it's been in the Far Cry system for a while, but being able to use Nyx to sick him on people and push buttons and stuff.
Nyx is a literal watchdog's hacking. Like it's okay. Nyx is just you're hacking stuff, but you're using a Muppet to do it.
But so he's also like chirping people like, you know, like Chorizo used to do.
The name that George Lucas suggested for Vader's apprentices in The Force Unleashed were Darth Icky and Darth Insanius. So I will take Sliro over those because those are truly, truly horrendous.
Hey, you know what, though? I don't blame him. He's put on the spot to come up with a cool name. We all know we've been in creative characters and like, what the heck am I going to name my character this time? Mm-hmm. And you're just like, just going to name this first random thing that comes out of my head because I want to play the game and not sit here and stare at this empty bar.
I think I like my last creative character I named Booze.
Okay.
Because I went to spell my name and I took a sip of beer and I looked back and I was like, I don't care anymore. And just wrote
B-O-O-T. Exactly.
Okay. So yeah, we talked about the Star Wars game. That's good. Should we talk about Helldivers? Let's do some diving into hell.
Yeah. All right, everybody.
Have a seat at the dive bar. Pull up a stool, grab a frosty cold beverage, and raise a toast to democracy. Jada, what's new in the world of Helldivers?
Well, first and foremost, have yourself some liver tea. This is exclusive to the IGN store. Make sure you go snag one of those if you're a big Helldiver fan.
For those of you who can't see it, it has a picture of a teacup with a grenade in it, and it's legally distinct, but still kicks some ass, so check it out.
That's yes. What killed Mrs. Doubtfire eventually. It took a long time, but they got her.
Yeah, so hopefully this will be a regular segment, but the dive bar is going to be all things Helldivers. Like, Arrowhead has been firing on full cylinders for, weeks, months now at this point, with new content. So we're gonna give you the people what you want. It's just more Helldivers stuff. First and foremost, we've got the new War Bond dropping on Thursday. This is the Democratic Detonation. We've got a couple new weapons, the BR-14 Adjudicator Rifle, which is armor penetrating best for small groups. We've got the Eruptor Rifle, which is bolt action and has explosive shrapnel. So that also sounds really cool. The Exploding Crossbow, Max mentioned earlier, a grenade pistol and a thermite grenade. Like, yes, I'm going to be blowing up so many bugs. And the robots now, since the robots are apparently back, we eliminated them, what we thought, but they're
so
back.
There's a fun detail because the gravity must be accounted for when aiming the crossbow. So you're going to have to arc it. You can't just.
Which is the one gun that actually so far that I've noticed uses gravity in this game, because I'll fire shots like across the map to destroy like the spore spewers, which are like the giant mushroom clouds that fog up the map. And I'll just shoot across the map until it destroys and clear out the fog. But apparently not going to be able to do that with the crossbow, or at least I'll have to aim better. I won't have to just aim directly at it. Bunch of new armors. These armors, they look kind of basic. I like the red one, which I believe is the Demolition Specialist, but I could be wrong. Those look pretty cool, but they're also still in the same red and yellow. Helldivers, we want some more.
I like that we got some good flavor text here for the Devastator armor. It says domestic versions of this armor allow colonial farmers to safely plant crops and mines side by side while staying in one piece. Just the bleakest, but also so, most upbeat universe over there. I love it.
So I could be wrong on this, but I believe Devastator is a brand in the Helldivers universe, because if you're sitting on your ship long enough, if you look above your monitors for upgrades, there's a TV monitor, and sometimes they play commercials. And I believe there's one that's called like Devastator, and it's about farming and using a hunting rifle to like hunt animals as well as hunting, you know, defending your property from bugs and stuff like that. So just great. There's also a cologne called Eagle Sweat, that you can get. So a lot of really cool in-universe jokes I love about that one. And we got some new capes as well. The big thing on Helldivers right now, we got a new major order, y'all. We got to defend Chort Bay. Minkin.
Chort?
Chort. Chort. Like, not short, but Chort. Chort Bay.
Like Minkin, Chortle.
And Lasaf. Yes, Chortle. Those are like major orders right now. So hopefully those will, you know, by the time you guys are listening to tomorrow, it may be done. We may be moving on to planets like Chuhi and Penta. Maybe it's Chuhe. I'm not sure. It looks like Chuhi to me. So, some interesting planets. I'm happy. I've always wanted to go to Chort Bay. So I'm very excited that they added this one. It's hard for our major.
I don't like the sound of this Menkent planet. I don't think they Menkent what? Men sure can. They're going to come there and they're going to do it and try to tell me my business.
My family used a summer in Chort Bay and it was lovely back in the 90s, but it's gotten worse.
But yeah, I mean, I've been grinding Helldivers. I've unlocked everything in all the war bonds, so I'm super excited for this new war bond to drop on Thursday. So I have a reason to return to the front lines. I've been on, I've returned to civilian life for a few days, you know, good old vacations that I've earned.
What's your recommended, like, if somebody is sort of out of the picture, what's a low level loadout you can pick up to kind of get in the action?
Ooh, low levels. So bring the Eagle Airstrike, because that is great for clearing out bases, bug holes, fabricators, depending on what you're fighting. Bring the grenade launcher, because that is also great for those. Let's see. And then the Gatling Sentry for if you're low level. And then probably the Rover Backpack, I think, is the other low level thing I would recommend if you're just getting into it, which is basically a little drone that has a laser rifle duct taped to it and shoots things that come close to you. So that's my advice for low level. High level play right now, for those, because some of you out there, I'm sure, high level grinding like me. The bubble shield, auto cannon, sentry, airstrike, Eagle Airstrike is still a go-to for me. And then the quasar cannon has become a big favorite. Even though it's very new, but it's very good. Other alternates, I've actually started bringing the universal bubble, which is just a big bubble shield like from Halo, which is great for covering you at the computer terminals when, you know, you're shooting off a bunch of things. Also stops you from getting ragdolled from rockets and things like that. Not as great against bugs, but great against robots. And then I also really, really, really like the what is it called? It's the orbital airburst strike, which gives you three, once it's fully upgraded, it gives you three, like, just AOE explosions of shrapnel that just completely take down bug holes, or not bug holes, but bug breaches, excuse me.
This game is a blast. I've been very sort of late to the party on it, and there's I think I talked about this last week, but like it doesn't feel like I'm being punished for sleeping on it. Like, it feels very welcoming to jump back into. It's such a just straightforward, like, go in there, shoot the robots, shoot the bugs, just make a mess of them. And, you know, it's, you know, you can have like sort of a longer adventure where you drop in and try to do a bunch of optional objectives, or you can just kind of go in and run and gun it. But it kicks some ass.
And then
Ryan, Matt, are you guys feeling the urge to jump back into this or check it out, or what's, Is the threat of robots too daunting? Are you scared of them?
No, I mean, it's actually really good to hear that if you've dipped out for a while, you can get back in there and it's not overwhelming. Because I think that's the one thing that keeps me from coming back to games like this, is I'll play them when they first come out. And then I'm like, oh, cool. And then a bunch of other stuff comes out and I go over there. And then I'm like, oh, I'm too scared to go back. Everyone's too good. And then I keep reading stories about, like, they're like, everyone's bullying the guys who wear certain clothes or whatever. And I'm like, oh, man, that's really so mean. I want to play my lonely single player games with the lights
dim. It's great because it's like really purely uncompetitive, right? There's there's no meta or something that's constantly changing, right? Where people are like, this is the new technique that people have developed to eradicate the bugs and destroy the robots every couple of weeks. It's like every upgrade is like, it's not necessarily more powerful or weaker or anything like that. It's just like, how cool do you want the explosions to look when you blast the aliens with new, like, gadget, right? Like, they're toys. and they feel like toys. And so all of the like special, like the war, like special orders that you can like get are like for fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which makes jumping in really easy.
For those that may be coming back to it, there's now 4 war bonds. The first one is your standard one, which is free. I recommend just kind of jumping into the newest one too. Like, don't worry about like going in order and getting the Steeled Veterans, which was the first one that came with like the special edition of the game, or the I can't remember what the electrical one was called, but I wouldn't worry about those. I would get the new stuff and then go back to it, because the good news is about this one, like, you know, for those who may not have played it, yes, you can buy the premium like battle passes with actual money, but you can earn that currency just by playing. You know, I get usually each battle pass costs about 1,000. I usually pick up anywhere from 40 to 60 credits every mission. So it adds up pretty quick.
That's great.
So like you do just have to sink some time into it. But yeah, definitely recommend going with just the new one. I haven't got a chance to test it yet, so that may change as of next week, and I'll let you guys know after I've spent a bunch of time with all this stuff. But
sure.
As of right now, I recommend just kind of going for the newest of the new. Like, don't play with, you know, the leftovers from last week when you can play with the new lasagna. I don't know. I'm mixing metaphors.
The new lasagna? That's
the new lasagna. Yeah, it's the new hotness. Lasagna. You know,
right,
Garfield's
on.
Got a movie coming out. It makes sense, right?
They're rebooting lasagna.
Lasagna
2.
For our listeners out there, if you are in our Beyond Facebook group, I want to hear your stories, your Helldiver stories. Give us your funniest story. Give us your, you know, wackiest extraction, your close calls that you actually made. Share those in the Facebook Beyond group. I'll drop a post before this episode goes live, and I want to read those out on the show. So whether you're an audio listener or a video listener, leave us those stories so we can
share some war stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll revisit that on the next edition of Dive Bar. On that note, I think we are coming to a close for this episode of Beyond. Thank you all for hanging out and joining me, mostly for talking about Dengar. I love to talk about Dengar. It's a good time. What if you could give Dengar one piece of fashion advice, Jada, Matt? What would you give him?
Try tie dye.
I got cut out of that.
Try tie dye.
Tie dye.
Try some tie dye for your, you know, your look.
You know what's weird? I think tie dye does exist in Star Wars. Like the Rebel Endors, their camo was basically tie dye, which is very, I don't know, it's sort of on.
So there's bananas in the new Outlaws trailer, and I looked it up to see if bananas are a thing in Star Wars. There's like a shot of like an open market, and there's a bunch of bananas there, and I was like, oh, I think that's the first time I ever saw bananas in Star Wars. And there's a Wikipedia entry for bananas that lists the 2 other times that it was there, and one of them is a like a Jar Jar children's book where he probably steps on one or farts or whatever.
You know, Ubisoft had to double check on whether or not that was allowed before they put it in.
Yeah, the there's mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of people in charge of the bananas in Star Wars.
There's a long list of stuff that's canon in Star Wars that's just regular stuff, like ducks are in Star Wars.
Yeah, sure. I was at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland, and there were ducks there. And
that's canon.
Like, oh, yeah, they're canon. They have their own Wikipedia page because they're actually in the water in Naboo when Padme and Anakin get married or whatever.
There's a line in the original Star Wars novelization where Obi-Wan's like, it's like water off a duck's back, and Luke's like, what's a duck? And it's very stupid joke.
You think the Empire exterminated the ducks, right? Because that's what the implication is Obi-Wan knows what a duck is, therefore they were there before, and then the Empire took over, and now there are no ducks.
Their evil
knows no bounds.
Oh.
They're probably delicious. I mean, I imagine after you've eaten like grilled kwaki and lizard monkey for 6 years, if you have like a duck confit, you're like, this is incredible. What have we been doing eating these womp rats for so long?
Ducks. Anyway. There's an animal I've not thought about since, before you were born. That's an interesting thought. I like that fan theory that the Empire got rid of ducks. Maybe
they took over and they were like, all right, first order of business, we got to get rid of the ducks.
There's an extended version of that, like, Anakin Padme scene where he's like, I hate sand. Also ducks. Don't even get me started on ducks. I'm going to send my dark troopers to go eradicate them. Just clear them off in Naboo. Who knows? Just in time for the end of the show, for those of you watching the video version, our producer Tom has photoshopped Boba Fett and Dengar's, not their wedding, but Dengar's wedding, and Boba Fett is there officiating it wearing a weird leisure suit. We have fun here, you know, we do.
Outdoor wedding on a cloudy day is a risky move for a man who's 70% toilet paper, but let's hope it works out, you know?
Oh, wow. Anyway, before we go, real quick, I want to give a shout out to IGN Rewards, which is a fun place to get free stuff. Just head IGN.com/rewards right now. We're giving away a bunch of fun stuff. You can get a copy of Dreamlight Valley Cozy Edition. We got copies of Outcast, A New Beginning. There's only so many words you can make game titles out of. And then there's a Metal Mind, Nintendo Switch, and Game Key, a bunch of other stuff. Keep an eye on that. It's free to sign up, and you get access to cool giveaways and deals and stuff like that. On that note, thank you all for joining me on this episode of Beyond.
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 Yeah. Also check out Outcasts Aquemini and Outcasts AT Aliens. Really good albums.
Yeah, I agree.
What about The Love Below?
Not the biggest fan. It grew on me, but you know, they kind of lost me there.
What about Speaker Box?
Speaker Box is better.
What do you think? I was going to say, who would win in a fight, Speaker Box or Love Below?
I don't know. I feel like The Love Below gets more people on the dance floor, so you might get a rowdy army to fight for you on that one.
Glad we got to the bottom of that. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Think about while looking at pictures of Dengar's wedding.
But all I want is to live free, so I'm gonna risk it all.
Hi, it's Jennifer, a founder of the Go Kid Go Network. Do your kids love wacky worlds, superheroes, and inventing? Of course they do! That's why our shows Bobby Wonder and Lucy Wow are set in Pflugerville, the nonstop fun and adventure universe where imagination, creativity, STEM, and positive role models abound. Join the Pflugerville fun by searching for Bobby Wonder and Lucy Wow on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.